We've been here many times, and it's been a season we have had a lot of speculations regarding my future and my decision to continue being coach of Bayer Leverkusen. And at this moment, I feel that this is the right place for me to be, to develop as a coach. I am a young coach, but I have to feel it, and right now I feel that this is the right place.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
On Easter weekend, the traditional start of the run-in, isn't it, really? This is the time where some seasons can be made or broken. Yeah, it doesn't really sound right. It's sort of like make or break when you say it in the past tense, but it's that time of year, isn't it? Everyone's at home scoffing chocolate, watching loads and loads of football, and there's been some great football this weekend. I actually went to go and see a game. I went across the country yesterday to Wolverhampton to watch the final of the Continental Cup, which isn't a European trophy. That's just the name of the sponsors. And it's the League Cup in the women's game. So it's basically the top two divisions in women's football. And it was won by Arsenal. So it was a great day out. I really enjoyed myself. And I've rushed back today to record this podcast and catch up with the guys and talk about football while I'm just wallowing still in the celebrations of watching Arsenal women lift some silverware and missing out on the touchline bust-up, which has amused quite a few people, isn't it, Jan?
Yeah, apparently there was some shenanigans about whether they used multi-ball system or a single-ball system, which caused all sorts of issues, apparently. And I think there was some unwelcome male aggression, as it was called by Emma Hayes, from the Arsenal bench. But she ended up at the end pushing the Arsenal manager, which opened up a whole can of worms about, you know, how that would have looked if it was the other way around. But it wasn't. It was still uncalled for. But of course, you missed all of that. It was all over the socials, I gather.
The thing that I thought was going to be the dominating story of that final was that one of the players collapsed on the pitch at 90 minutes. Frida Leonhardsen-Marnum just dropped, which sent the whole stand cold. When you see them bringing on the defib and the oxygen, you fear the worst. Luckily, it sounds like it wasn't that bad because she didn't go to hospital. She actually travelled home with the rest of the players, but would presume that she fainted on the pitch rather than it being something far more serious. Obviously, they'll have tests to see what exactly went on there and to make sure that it doesn't happen again. But I think that was what we were suspecting to be the big story when we got back to our hotel in the evening. And then we were surprised to see that it was actually more about the sort of Mourinho-style touchline shenanigans. In the build-up to the game, they were talking about this as being Emma Hayes and Jonas Eidevall's last head-to-head as Arsenal and Chelsea managers, because she's obviously going off to manage the US national team. And you don't normally have this sort of build-up as a coach head-to-head in the women's game. So it looks like they've just discovered this rivalry just as it's coming to a close. Well done there. But it'd be interesting to see if they try and build this up in future with whoever replaces Emma Hayes at Chelsea and see if they can try and drum up the sort of pointless column inches in the women's game as they do in the men. Terry, it's inevitable, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, when you've got people watching these games more and more, you have to have a little bit of circus and theatre around it. Quite interesting, Jonas Eidevall's reaction afterwards. He was quite taken aback in his remarks afterwards. He was extremely angry about being accused of male aggression. And he said it all stemmed from, there was a confrontation with Erin Cuthbert, who wanted to, the ball went out of play right by the dugout.
Yeah.
She wanted someone to retrieve the ball. That's just the way that he tells it. And of course, Eidevall went, well, we're not doing multi-ball, so get it yourself.
Yeah.
And that's the way he tells it. And I think that it was that moment that Emma Hayes sort of like, that sticks out for Emma Hayes as the sort of like the moment. And the way Eidevall tells it sort of like sounds a little bit reasonable. But it's interesting because footballers can generate aggression from people, particularly on the touchline. I mean, we go to non-league football, we watch AFC Whiteleaf.
Yeah.
And we see and hear stories of aggressions going on, lots of aggressions going on the touchline from otherwise incredibly placid people ordinarily in real life. And it's interesting to see how the women's game deals with that as well. That sort of thing might be seen as perfectly normal in the men's game, but perhaps the broader point that Emma Hayes is making is that shouldn't be normal, full stop, but it certainly shouldn't be certain normal in the women's game. So I think it does broaden, there's possibilities for a broader conversation about that. And it'd be interesting to see if anything develops from that story. I'm sure Jonas Edvald and Emma Hayes will meet again.
Oh, I've no doubt they will. And of course, it will do great for some narrative there as well when they finally do. But hey, I can't just talk about how great my weekend was. Jan, tell me how great your football weekend's been.
Well, do you know what, Graham? It actually started quite well and ended horribly. So Sunderland were on a bit of a bad run. We got a draw in our previous game before Good Friday, and then we got a good win away to Cardiff, who were above us, still are above us. And everyone felt really, really good about themselves in my little world. And so we were playing Blackburn today, and all of the odds looked like we were going to turn Blackburn over, who have not had the best away record for several months. And Blackburn done us 5-1.
Ouch.
At home.
Ouch.
At home. And apparently the last half hour was played to a more or less empty stadium of light. You kind of don't mind losing if you've put in a decent shift, but you know, reading the report, I haven't watched the highlights back yet. And that's because I can't cope with the PTSD it'll probably give me. But reading the report back, it just looked like it was calamitous, absolutely calamitous. And it's going to be, you can't lose 5-1 at home and it not be a calamity or a calamitous performance. But it does bring into sharp focus, I think, just how this season has gone from being something that we felt we were building on, I think, as a fan base. We were just outside of the playoffs when Tony Mowbray was given his marching orders. We've spoken a lot on this podcast about Michael Beale and his time at the club. And Mike Dodds, who's the kind of first team coach that stepped in a caretaker capacity for the rest of the season, doing what he can with a very, very young, inexperienced squad. This was comfortably our worst defeat of the season. So where do we go from here? I don't know. We're not going to get relegated. I think that's not a possibility. Well, it's a possibility, but it's highly unlikely. But we've still got to play Leeds and West Brom, who are both doing very, very well. And we need to look at the director of football who makes the decisions on which coach is in situ, which players we have there. And Christian Speakman, he pulled the trigger on this, and I'm using the words calamity again, because you know we were doing okay with Mowbray. And he was well-liked by the players, by the supporters, and look where we are now. It's a complete mess, and the club is going to have to do a lot of work to get the supporters back on side, gain their trust, gain their confidence for the start of next season.
Today's defeat saw them drop into the bottom half. Now, they're 11 points clear of the drop zone with six games to go, and the teams down at the bottom there aren't gaining any points, so it's not as if anyone's going on a tear to escape the drop zone. They've lost the same number of games as Plymouth, who are just a point above the drop zone. So that shows how bad it's actually got for Sunderland, even though they're in mid-table. Do you get the impression that they've just written this season off? I mean, they got a good win, as you said, on Saturday against Cardiff, but it just looked like they've just thought, right, okay, well, let's just play out the rest of the games and have done with it.
Yeah, I think that was the situation when they got rid of Michael Beale. I mean, you can't change your manager, have effectively three managers in a season, and think that you're still going to get something out of it. Yeah, it's definitely written off. There's not many games to go. Like you said, we're clear of relegation, really. So it's just a shame we've gone backwards. When we came up a couple of years ago, we went straight into the playoffs. And I think that we, you know, I'm fairly confident that if Mowbray was still in place, we would be still challenging for the playoffs. Wouldn't be challenging for the top spots. You know, the three sides up there, Leicester, Ipswich and Leeds, are far too good, as I think we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. But definitely we would have been in and around the playoffs and, you know, may not have gone up through the playoffs, but it, you know, still maybe we would have got to the final and at least there's some progress there. But I mean, clearly we've just gone backwards. It puts a lot of pressure on the club. It puts a lot of pressure on whoever comes in as the new head coach at the beginning of next season, because they're going to have to really get a song out of these players. And it remains to be seen who's going to stay. because obviously the model is to try and bring in younger players and flip them and make a profit. So it could be a completely new side that takes the field come August.
Yeah, Terry, it's a dangerous game to play, isn't it? Just letting a season peter out. You've got to look at Sunderland because the fans are going to lose interest. But also you've got players coming up to the end of their contracts. If they're looking at a club that just doesn't seem to care about what's actually going on or are obviously making bad decisions, they're not going to want to stick around, are they? So do you think that what has let them down is actually a lack of communication with the fan base to say the reason behind getting rid of Mowbray was? Or do you think, like all other clubs, they just bumble their way through it?
I think clubs do tend to bumble their way through with these kind of external communications about decisions that they make. And a lot of this is not just simply because they're just not very good at communicating. It may also simply be because, you know, a lot of the reasons why managers go isn't always necessarily down to results, or, you know, some of the things that go on, you know, are confidential, frankly. Some of the discussions that go on are confidential. And I would suggest to you that it's a painful process. I mean, a lot of clubs do it and they do it a lot. So you think that probably isn't that painful. But I would suggest to you that it is a painful process for everyone concerned, including the people firing. And so those aren't ideal circumstances to then be trying to communicate to a fan base. And, you know, this doesn't apply to Sunderland, but obviously with Sunderland having such an engaged fan base to begin with, you know, with their own fan-created media and a real passion for the sport and a pride in the fact that it's considered to be something of a hotbed up there, it's easy to be misunderstood if you get your comms wrong. So the fact is, actually, the more straightforward option is to maybe just say nothing and then just hope that results pick up, because that's probably the best way of doing it. The bigger issue is internally. What, you know, from what you've just said, Graham, I mean, it's vital that Christian Speakman, or I assume will probably stay, I don't know, but it's not wise to go through sporting directors at the same regularity that you go through coaches. You know, sporting directors do make mistakes, and they should have that enough distance between them and the results for them to be given the opportunity to make mistakes and rectify them, unlike coaches who don't often get that. But what's vital is that the club and that Christian Speakman is speaking to the players and making it clear to them that, you know, this, you know, mistakes have been made, and look, next, this is our plan for next season. This is what we want to do to for plan for next season. And we do have a plan, even though right now things have kind of gone to poo somewhat. And I think that that's really what they've got to do. Interesting, what could be a segue, I suppose, if you did want to segue. Dortmund have started making announcements about their plans for next season in terms of the backroom and stuff like that. I won't bore you with the details, but they're going kind of public with those plans. They're hiring a new sporting director. They're making some changes in the back office. And that may well be in response to the fact that, Saturday's result notwithstanding, it's been a disappointing season for Dortmund. There was an expectation that they might try and win the title, or at least try and win the title. But at the moment, they're kind of struggling to stay in the Champions League spots. And they were probably thinking, well, we're going to lose to Bayern, so let's get some comms ready for after that result so that we can say, well, look, we're forward planning for the future. You know, this is what next season's going to look like from a backroom staff point of view, which I think is something that, you know, other clubs could certainly do in situations like that. And certainly Sunderland.
Well, I will segue through it in a little bit, because I want to go back sure. to Jan on this, because Jan, what happens, of course, obviously, and you're probably more aware than either of us, what is actually happening is that it becomes a hotbed for conspiracy theories, doesn't it, when the communication is bad or non-existent about the reasons why the club does things or its hiring policy, and then the fans will come up with their own opinions as to why these things happen. Are you seeing a lot of that on Sunderland X, or as it's probably called now, or Sunderland, yeah. Social media.
I wouldn't say they're kind of lurching into conspiracy territory, but there's certainly the backlash I'm starting to see more against the owner, Kirilu Dreyfus. You know, he's a young man with a lot of money, and I suppose the natural thing is to question whether, you know, he's got the wisdom to be running a club with a 140-odd-year history behind it. But he's surrounded by people who know what they're doing. I think, you know, Terry was a bit more measured than I think I am about Speakman. You know, he's done a good job when he was at Birmingham. He did a good job up to recently. So I don't necessarily think that the owner's age has got much to do with it, but there is that backlash. And the real issue, I think, the frustration amongst the fans and Mowbray was being more and more overt in his, I wouldn't say criticism, but he was kind of hinting at the fact that You know, you could have a model where you want to have very young players and you want to bring them through, and that's great and exciting, and you get to see some great talent that you would ordinarily be rotting in some of the team's reserves or playing in the lower divisions. So it's great to see, but you do need to mix that up a bit with some experience, and that has been lacking. Mulberry did manage to get Bradley Dack in, or Speakman brought in Bradley Dack, who's got a bit more experience, and he's from Blackburn, who did us today. So there is a frustration with the kind of pigheadedness and the sticking to the model. And it's always referred to in inverted commas like that whenever I see, even talking to people, they even do it with their fingers like I'm doing now, just because I think it's becoming a bit of a bone of contention. And I think that you're right, that there's been a bit of a lack of communication. We don't really know why Mowbray really went, but I think it was because of the model and his frustration with it. And I think, even give him some credit, I saw something from Michael Beale, or a quote from Michael Beale the other day, where he was even saying that the side needed a bit more experience. Because, you know, when you come up against something like today, where you've got a team like Blackburn who haven't won away from home, suddenly you find yourself a couple of goals down to them in front of a crowd that's suddenly turning pretty hostile. You need some experienced players to just be able to put their hands on the shoulders of the younger lads and just say, like, come on, guys, this is how we do this. This is how we should approach this. Otherwise, you just implode. And that's kind of what's happened.
Was that Michael Beale saying that through his official social media channels or through his burn account?
I think he was actually talking to an actual journalist face to face, or it could have been through a burner.
Are you sure? Or was it just Michael Beale's sock puppet?
Like Michael Beale standing outside a church handling a little lamb.
Terry, talking about overblown social media reactions, how has the reaction been to the biggest game in Germany this weekend? You've already given away the result that Dortmund won, surprisingly enough. Well, not really. I mean, like, they played brilliantly.
You're not surprised if you watched the game, no. Also, I read the first reference on Kicker just now, recalling it the German classic. And I know it's finally, after all these years, making its way through to the German media as the De Klassiker has won. So now we have to call it De Klassiker, guys. All right.
Well, if Kicker says so, then
that's it. If Kicker says it's De Klassiker, then it's De Klassiker, because Kicker is the final word on these matters, as far as I'm concerned. So the biggest reactions was obviously the result itself, the shock. 10 years since the last time Dortmund won at the Allianz Arena. But also the manner of Bayern's performance, I think, was a shock, I think, to a lot of people, including myself. I've not seen Bayern as much this season as I have in the past. But what's been missing from Bayern a lot increasingly is that ability to just completely overwhelm opponents, you know, over, say, a 10-minute period, particularly, and oftentimes, in fairness, usually against lesser opponents. But in the first 10, 15 minutes, they, you know, the Bayern of old would just totally overwhelm their opponents and maybe take a 1 or 2 goal lead, and then really that's the end of the game. You may as well flip over and see what else is on. But that just hasn't been the case with Bayern for a long time against the top teams. I mean, you know, they'll destroy Heidenheim, I should think, next week, for example. But they're just not there. And that lack of engagement that they had, I mean, like an almost lack of belief, really, really strange to see in a Bayern Munich side. And of course, the other talk was Mats Hummels, who is in the news quite a lot in Germany because he wasn't selected for the Germany squad, even though he's in very good form. And he had the game of his life. He had an amazing game, easily man of the match, you know, and didn't score an own goal to give Bayern an equaliser, which is what somebody texted me to say that was going to happen. And I thought, the thing is, right, Graham, I was literally about to tweet that when you sent that message through. You went 1-1, Hummels OG, plus 5. And that was almost word for word what I was going to tweet. And I thought, wow, well, it's clearly not as funny a joke as it
is. Clearly a meme already.
I think, obviously, just the general shock. And the reality, because earlier in the day, Bayer Leverkusen came from 1-0 down to win in injury time against Hoffenheim to extend the gap to 13. And so it all just now feels like the blocks are sliding in, the stars are now aligning. It's looking very much like Bayer Leverkusen are probably going to win the Bundesliga, 13 points in April. I mean, it's Bayer Leverkusen, but, you know, I don't think anybody really feels that team's going to collapse, even if they do what Napoli did and just kind of fall over the line. But I don't really see that. they've still got so much to play for. They're in the semi-final of the German Cup and the Europa League as well. So that was the reaction there. Actually, it was surprisingly measured, to be honest with you. I mean, just people dealing with the reality that finally it looks like Bayern aren't going to win the Bundesliga. Yeah, momentous weekend and a momentous result.
I watched the game on Saturday, and well, of course I did because I was texting you about it. But I think one of the most telling points of the game was when they made that triple sub on about an hour, when they took off Musiala, Müller and Sané and brought on Gnabry and Koeman and Tell. And nothing seemed to change about that. They took off three players that were being frustrated and introduced three more players who were just going to be equally as frustrated.
Yeah, and you would normally, particularly Coman and Gnabry, who are, you know, veterans by now at this point. Yeah. I mean, they're not veterans, but, you know, these are guys who have known what needs to be done at key moments in order to win games and win titles. You know, these are good. Tell is 19 and experienced, brilliant player, absolutely brilliant player, but inexperienced. But the other two, you'd have expected to have been some kind of difference makers, but it just wasn't there. The pattern wasn't there. Leave it to the tactical experts to break that down. But it was almost a lack of energy, really. And unfortunately, that's really got to come from the coach. So it's looking pretty bleak. I mean, for a second, it looked dicey because Kane scored what really in any other realm of reality would have been a perfectly cromulent goal. But it was ruled out because of VAR. That was great, by the way. But I mean, it really is rubbish to have good goals like that ruled out because of that. But anyway, but that might have put a little bit of extra shine on it. Maybe put some peril. But it was more about Bayern, that result, than it was about Dortmund. I want to praise Dortmund, but I mean, like, I think Bayern just let Dortmund do their thing, and then that's why it worked. And a lot of teams don't let Dortmund do their thing, and that's why they've struggled a little bit this season.
The whole thing was a bit surreal. I mean, they kept cutting away to a fan who was dressed up like the Easter Bunny pretty much every time Dortmund did anything well or Bayern did something not so well. And it just made it seem a bit more weird. Yeah, Kane did have a goal disallowed. It was right at the very end, but it could have changed things, I suppose, in the dying minutes. He also missed a couple of sitters as well.
He did.
Which was not like him at all. He's been having a great season over there. But 31 goals, isn't he?
31.
Yeah.
31 goals for Bayern Munich and 7 assists as well.
Yeah.
For Bayern, only Sané has created more assists. You know, the next goal scorer down from Harry Kane is Jamal Musiala on 10.
Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, I mean, like, really, you know, it's been all about Harry Kane, you know, in terms of attacking for Bayern Munich. And maybe that's a problem, and maybe it's not. Maybe it's Harry Kane's been carrying the team, or maybe it's like the team's attack is not balanced because there's too much focus on Harry Kane. I'm not sure I buy that. 31 goals is a lot of goals for a single player to score. You can't say that he hasn't. I mean, he has delivered everything and more that has been expected of him. I feel a little bit sorry for him. I'm sure there are people over here who don't feel sorry for him. I feel he should have stayed, but I feel a bit sorry for him. But, you know, he's still in the Champions League and also there's next season. So, you know.
Well, yeah, and I think, I haven't checked up on this, but I think he's being suitably rewarded for his hard work as well.
Yeah. And I mean, also on the other side, I mean, apparently he's happy there and they are very happy with him. Apparently he's extremely... I mean, we all know from it that he is well known for being a very, very pleasant man, a very polite and generous hearted man and a good guy. And I'm sure all of those riches will come to Harry Kane, but he just has to wait a season, that's all. See, it is funny because obviously
yes. The
whole narrative about him going was that, you know, he's going to win titles.
Yeah.
And then so far... And now they've got to play Arsenal and try and get past Arsenal. And even then, so I don't know. It's hard to see them winning the Champions League from this point, even if they were to beat Arsenal over two legs.
He does enjoy scoring against Arsenal as well. So
I don't doubt they'll score, yeah. But I'm not convinced that they won't concede against Arsenal. Certainly with the way that Arsenal play and with the players that they've got. I thought they put in a pretty functional performance against City. I thought they were well disciplined. I mean, it's not their job to entertain neutrals. They got the point there and... You know, they might have been out of, but either one could have won. But they are dangerous opponents, no question about it. One of the best teams in Europe, possibly a title winner in England. So Bayern should not be taking that game for granted. And any Bayern fan who thinks that they can look back on historical results against Arsenal and think that that will set them in good stead, I think will be mistaken, sorely mistaken.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously the Arsenal fans will be looking at that quarterfinal as something where Arsenal can bury a lot of demons as far as Bayern are concerned. But this is an entirely different team, so there's no one in that team that will have any of the scars of previous encounters, which is a good thing. But yeah, Kane's having such a good season over there at the moment in Germany that the Bundesliga has its own QR code for him, for people to vote to tell them whether or not he'll beat Robert Lewandowski's record of 42, isn't it, Terry? Isn't that the record?
Yeah, 41. So he needs to get to 42 in order to beat Robert Lewandowski.
Right, so that's another 11-odd goals, isn't it? And in 8 games or something. So that's unlikely to happen now. But, you know, he's good value for it. What do you think about Tottenham? Do you think Tottenham have been less of a team without him this season? Or do you think that they would be where they are right now if they still had Kane up front for them?
I think that it was the right decision for both parties. I think that Tottenham finished 8th last season, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they're currently 5th. And they could get inside of the top 4. So they could get into the Champions League football. They've clearly improved under Postecoglou. He's brought in Madison and Werner as well, who came in and I think he's doing really, really well as he's come in. I remember when he went to Chelsea and Terry said on this very pod that he's not an out-and-out striker. He's a forward and he's there to kind of support play. And he's very much doing that at Spurs, as far as I can see. And Postecoglou's getting a song out of Richarlison, which yeah. We said in this pod, you know, that's a difficult thing to do because he doesn't necessarily score buckets of goals. And he hasn't necessarily scored buckets of goals this season, but he's got 10 goals, which is you know, an improvement. So I think Spurs can draw a line under the Kane era and concentrate on better times to come. For Harry Kane, if I was him, I'd still be thinking this was the right move. I've gone to Germany. It is only one season. I've got a load of goals. I've come close to Lewandowski's record, and next season, it may well be business as usual. But he's gone and had one of the seasons of his life, and I think that's a great experience for him. And he could well be, you know, a legend at Bayern after a couple of years. So yeah, it's I think it's worked out really well for both of them.
Yeah, as Terry alludes to, it's fun to just look at it and think, isn't this funny? Bayern win everything all the time, and now as soon as he comes over there, he's infected them with Tottenham. Terry didn't actually say that, but that's what he was alluding to, in my mind anyway. If he had stayed there and played in Postecoglou's side, he would have scored a hatful of goals this season as well, wouldn't he? And everyone would be clamouring for Ange Postecoglou to be the next England manager as well, wouldn't they? That's what the narrative, I think, would be this season. That's what's happening in the alternative universe, that what if Harry stayed at Spurs and got Alan Shearer's record? Yeah, I mean, that's another thing. We'd be having to put up with Alan Shearer like getting more and more grumpy every week as Harry Kane gets in closer and closer.
There's also, in that alternative universe, Postecoglou would be linked with Liverpool and Bayern as well, which brings us back nicely to the subject.
Well, is that a crazy thing anyway? I mean, would Bayern or Liverpool be looking at Postecoglou and saying, well, actually, why don't we get him here? Postecoglou had that same impact at Spurs as Klopp did at Liverpool. I think if you can't get Alonso, and I don't know if Alonso is going to go to Liverpool, I don't think he's in the bag as many Liverpool fans assume he is just going to pack up his things at his desk at Leverkusen and then wander over to Liverpool.
Xabi Alonso announced earlier last week that he is definitely staying at Leverkusen for at least another season.
Yeah. They say that.
No, he went public and he held a press conference and said, no, I am staying. And this was in the couple of days leading up to this. This was clearly briefed by Leverkusen. So he'd sat down and he had a conversation with Simon Rolfes, who's the sporting director at Leverkusen. And at the end of it, he said, yeah, well, I'm going to stay where I am. So, I mean, Bayern are now actively looking for other managers, and so are Liverpool. Liverpool obviously now quite strongly linked with Roberto De Zerbi, but also the fellow from Sporting in Portugal.
Amorim, yeah.
But his name is linked. But also, get this.
Yeah.
Among the names linked with the Bayern job is Julian Nagelsmann, which would be the biggest kick in the teeth to Oliver Kahn and Hasan Salihamidžić, the guys who were running Bayern last year after they fired him, to bring him back. What a, I mean, extraordinary show of humility to do that, and to be fair, say, we got this wrong, lads. It's like, you know, so, but yeah, I mean, that's a big surprise. The story is now is that Xabi Alonso is the deal, any deal with it is off. He will not be moving away from Bayer Leverkusen. He's going to stick around and defend the Bundesliga title probably, and also have his first season as a coach in the Champions League, which does kind of all make a bit of sense, really. I mean, like, he won't be under a lot of pressure there to succeed. He's overachieved at Leverkusen. And, you know, he'll be able to go through his difficult second season as a winning coach, you know, with a degree of security and protection, which he would not get at Bayern and probably wouldn't get at Liverpool. So I think it's probably actually the right thing to do. It's just bold, that's all. I mean, like, those clubs don't usually offer you the job twice, do they? Let's be honest. The opportunity to manage either of those clubs is so rare that you normally you'd back yourself and take it. But he's done it. The other people are sort of like suggesting, well, actually, all that's really happening is they're waiting for Ancelotti to step aside so that he can go to Real Madrid, which is possibly the actual truth behind it all. So anyway.
If you were looking for proof that Harry Kane has infected Bayern with Spursiness, it would be bringing back Nagelsmann. That would be great. I would love that. I would really love that. And for a nice bit of symmetry, I think what's going to happen next at the start of next season, coupled with that, is that Christian Speakman will announce Tony Mowbray has been reappointed Sunderland manager.
Yes. Let's see it. Yeah.
I think if it was true infected with Spursiness, I think Bayern would be sniffing around Mourinho, I think, maybe.
Yeah, well, you know, which could still happen.
Mourinho is in play. I mean, he is in play. So, I mean, it really isn't out of the question. Where are we now? April, he's not getting a job now, is he? So he'll get a job in the summertime. It is not out of the question at all. I mean, if that happens, I'm telling you right now, that that's going to be an absolute shit fest and a disaster for Bayern.
hilarious.
Let's hope we see it.
I think they'd know that as soon as, even before they actually appointed him, wouldn't they? I think while they were going through the interview process, this is a horrific mistake, isn't it? Yes. Let's do it anyway.
They'll want a Bundesliga coach, obviously. I mean, it's very unlikely that he's not the right fit. It would be a major surprise. The new sporting director for Bayern Munich is a guy called Max Eberl, who was at Borussia Mönchengladbach. And then he had some illness problems, and then he stepped down for a while and he went to Red Bull after that, recovered from his illness and went to Red Bull. I don't know. And then was poached by Bayern. So he was the other guy. When they weren't cutting to the Easter Bunny guy, they were cutting to Max Eberl looking miserable during that game. And he's got a lot of work to do. And of course, one of those things is hiring a coach that's going to be up to the challenge, but also meets the criteria. And actually, there aren't many. And that's one of the reasons, I suspect, why Nagelsmann is in play. But, you know, the DFB, the German FA, they want to extend Nagelsmann's contract. They're really pleased with him. So, interesting times.
If he wins the Euros.
And if he wins the Euros unexpectedly, or gets them into the semi-finals unexpectedly. Yeah. Yeah, there'll be a Premier League club that will want him in the summer. For definite, there'll be a Premier League club that will. Yeah. Probably Chelsea.
Well, you can imagine them winning the Euros with a recalled Toni Kroos and a recalled Mats Hummels and I don't know, who else? I mean, Miroslav Klose, what's he doing at the moment? Bung him up front, yeah?
Yeah, well, I think that would be amazing. They could just try and see if they could coax Mesut Ozil to come out of retirement and take the blame for it when they get knocked out on penalties in the semi-final.
Yes. Well, there is going to be a lot of managerial speculation over the summer, isn't there? It's going to be quite a great summer for that. And yeah, there are going to be some very, very surprising hires, which we can all look forward to, because it means that there'll be some very non-surprising fires come October and November time as well. But there's still almost 2 months of football left to be played in this season. And we have got some great fixtures coming up for you this weekend, including Man United Liverpool. Jurgen Klopp, is that going to be the last time he faces Man United as a Premier League coach? Well, he's not going to come back to the Premier League, is he? He's already said that, hasn't he?
He has said that, but, you know, money talks, doesn't it?
And Klopp, by his own admission, is quite keen on money.
Yeah. Well, it does come in handy.
He is a professional.
Yes.
Yeah, and he does work for money. Yeah. And if you pay him money, he'll do stuff. We've seen that Jurgen Klopp do adverts for stuff. You think, I'm not sure that's really the most dignified. You seem to be selling DIY like some kind of solvent. I don't know what's going on here. That's why he's kind of, I will never coach a club in England again. I believe him, but at the same time, I don't know why he would say that. Hedge your bets, mate.
This is a guy with a beard who's done Razor adverts.
Yes. Yeah. So when he was Dortmund coach, he was doing all manner of stuff. I mean, probably because actually at the very beginning, he wasn't being paid that much, believe it or not, because, Dortmund didn't have that much money and he was a guy from Mainz. But he is a professional guy. I mean, I feel that he will probably ease himself into, whatever the equivalent of a Soccer Saturday chair is in Germany. I think that he'll end up doing stuff for Sky Deutschland and doing punditry. I think that he'll be good at that. I think we'll see Jurgen Klopp working for the BBC or ITV this summer in the Euros as a pundit.
I think so.
I reckon that is a done deal.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, of course, Kicker has obviously started to call Dortmund Bayern der Klassiker, but Sky's move of trying to call Man United Liverpool the classic never really took on, did it? And
did they try that?
They did try that. I think they tried that for one season, I think. And it didn't happen. It didn't happen. So, yeah, that will be going on. And another Sunday game that's had its time moved. It's at 3:30. But there's lots of local derbies or not-so-local derbies in the box set, like Man United Liverpool. You've got the Old Farm and the Old Firm in the same weekend. You've got the Rome derby as well. And you've got a Melbourne derby on Saturday morning as well. But we kick off with international football from Wembley, the start of the Lionesses' European qualification that we talked about last time. So it's a Nations League format. So they're playing Sweden, who they played, if you remember, in the semi-finals of the Euros and won handsomely. So a bit of narrative there. And if you want to see what we think about all those games, then get along to sofpodcast.com. Click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe. And it will be in your email on Friday. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Phillip, it's goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.
We are at Sound of Football on X, Blue Sky, and Instagram, so feel free to get in touch there or head to our website, sofpodcast.com. Don't forget to rate and review us.
Oh, we crossed with our goodbyes.
Yeah. Well,
you want to do that again?
No. It's fine. I'm strangely unprecious about that.
Right, you wait, yeah. When it goes out tomorrow, it'll be going, what the fuck?
I'm not precious about it, but if you could just put it right so I come last.
You'll be texting Graham at 2:00 in the morning and go, just so we're clear, I do want you.
He'll get his agent to call me up at 3 a.m. this morning.
I have told him to stop doing that, for the record.
Yes, at 2 a.m. in the morning.